How's life in Australia?
Yeah, good. Yeah, mate, it's probably been 12 years now. So just different way of life compared to living in the UK, I guess. You know, the sun shines most of the time. So yeah, it's good. Mate, we've got a good life living here.
Nice one, yeah. Are you able to keep up with City and all that over there?
I get to. I'll watch some of the games that kick off maybe early lunchtime. The 3 o'clock games become a bit too late at times for me. So, you know, it's 10, 11 o'clock in the evening. You know, the Champions League's 8 o'clock kickoffs. It's like 3, 4 o'clock in the morning for me. So I watch them on catch up. But I'll watch, now it's 7 hour time difference, I get to watch some of them.
Going back to the start, like, what do you first remember about Boothry Park?
Probably like the biggest memories, you know, back then. I grew up as a followed rugby. I was not necessarily a football follower, especially when I was younger. It was more rugby for me. But, you know, when it started becoming a bit more serious for me, the biggest things that would be apparent for me and memories would be one, the Liverpool game, and two, the gymnasium, which when you was a young teenager, just remember this huge, big, massive gym with covered in dust and freezing cold. You know, and that was their two memories before I got involved with the club, which was that stood out to me about Boothry Park. Yeah, I'll never forget them. Now I remember being as a young kid and going into this, what seemed like the biggest sports gym I've ever seen in my life, but it was freezing cold and covered in dust, you know, so.
Yeah, you hear like that was like state of the art at one point, but I remember when I used to have like birthdays there and that, like the wooden floorboards would be like all wavy and that, but.
It was a fantastic, great, and it was a great arena to play football, but, you know, because it was so big, but, you know, that gym just, you look back now and it potentially just give you nightmares, some of the stuff what we had to do in there, you know, kind of scarred you for life, but there was all really good memories, mate. They're all character building memories and, you know, it's all good. But there were early memories before I got, like say, involved with the club, which I used to go, geez, because I would travel from the east side of Hull to go there. And I'm like, what the hell am I coming to here? It's this freezing great big training gym. But anyway, yeah.
And in terms of playing football and like in and around Hull, like were you always Sunday league player?
Yeah, I always played Sunday league. And yeah, I started with teams like Van Leer and Jackson's, who were East Hull teams. And then there was always really successful. I mean, probably when we was 15, turning 16, the majority of the team that I played with all kind of went to Hull as apprentices or YTSs back then. But all the junior teams that we played with, we was always successful. We always used to win everything, you know, which, but then the majority of the players would then progress into playing as a YTS with Hull, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, it's always been strong, as you well know. And I try and follow the Hull Schoolboys, because that's kind of how I grew up. But I think the appeal's dropped away from that a little bit, which is a real shame, because that was a real bedrock of local football, I guess. And to get into one of them teams, it was like, geez, you're doing really well.
Were you always a centre-back?
No, I used to play. I was a striker, believe it or not. A striker. I never forget one season. I probably scored like 76 goals in one season, and I don't know how I ever ended up playing as a defender, but maybe I just got pushed further and further back. I don't know. It just happened that way, I guess. And maybe I was taller than a few, so I ended up playing at the back. I got no idea, but I always started as a striker, if I'm honest.
Did Did he get taken on at City as a striker then at first?
No, I didn't. No, I got taken in as a defender, I guess. And it was quite late into the piece, I guess, because they'd made decisions on who they wanted as YTSs, and I was like, all right, well, I'll pursue a different path. And then I was probably not the best footballer, but I was probably as good a rugby player as I was a footballer. And a lot of people said you'd been a far better rugby player than a footballer. So I was at that brink where I was like, well, all right, fair enough. If they're not interested, I'll go and play rugby. But then I got a call and, you know, we become a YTS. And that's kind of how it started, really.
Okay, so because City made the first move, you kind of went with that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, because like I said, my family have always been heavily involved with rugby. And, you know, like people say, he's probably even a better rugby player than a footballer. And but then they came calling and there was never a chance I was ever going to say no to it.
So what are your memories of those apprentice days? And like, you know, we had Gary Hobson saying you were good mates with him from being a young age.
Yeah, I mean, we're still close friends. You know, Gary was my best man at my wedding, and you know, he's very close to me. Even though we're living the opposite side of the world, we're still really close and catch up all the time. And look, I could talk forever about the memories. They're just some of the tasks that we had to do, which, you know, made you probably mentally strong that we are today, because of having to sweep stands and clean boots and clean washing and all those types of things that, you know, made you who you are today in terms of giving you that mental toughness that you kind of needed. And I'm not so sure it's there anymore with kids. And I understand these reasons why they don't do it, but stuff like the cleaning of boots and the dressing rooms and all things that we'd get up to when you shouldn't have done, it was, they're all, you know, they're priceless memories that would never ever be taken away. You don't ever get that in any other walk of life, what you do. You know, you can go and be an apprentice plumber, but you would never do some of the things that we do and experienced, you know. And some things are, you know, for our you know, our ears only, that, you know, they're not to be shared with people, because some of the things we did, you probably wouldn't imagine was going on. And but they're good memories that you take away.
Yeah, obviously, like Gary mentioned, some of the big characters like Billy Whitehurst and people like that. Do you have a good relationship with them?
Yeah, look, I joined, they were still there when I joined, and it was always the away dressing room was for the young trainees, and the home dressing room was obviously for the first team players. And you would interact with them, and you'd have a bit of cheek with them, and you know. But you kind of knew where you stood, and there was a line, and that you didn't want to cross. And the dream was to make it to get changed in the home dressing room, because if you got changed in the home dressing room, you was halfway there to kind of succeed in getting a chance to play. And yeah, you interacting, we like to Billy Whitehurst and your Malcolm Shortons and Gareth Roberts and people like these seasoned pros who have been there and seen what I was growing up doing. And I mean, some of the stunts that they would be pulling, you know, it's just unrepeatable, some of them.
But yeah, do you think that kind of helped young players when they could see that steady path of progression, where it's like, that's the next step kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely, because everybody wanted to come into work and get changed in the home dressing room. I mean, if you sat on one particular side of the away dressing room, you was struggling. You were struggling to kind of get a career going. But if you kind of progressed around the dressing room and then up the other side of the corridor into the home dressing room, and then there was a particular place where you started in there, and you kind of make your way around the benches to particular places, and then you're then progressing through the team, if you like. So yeah, it was, there was a real hierarchy, and there was a there was places where if you sat, and it's kind of hard to imagine, but if you sat at one side of the dressing room and then you made it to the other side and then you made it into the home dressing room, you kind of started making progression through the club, you know? So it was always that, you know, that ambition to go and sit at the other side of the dressing room, because if I sat at that side, I'm playing in the youth team in the first team. So I'm playing every week in the youth team. And if I sat at the other side of the bench, I'm then playing in the reserves for the first team, you know? So it was all that little progressive steps that you used to take.
And were there any like established players that would take you under their wing kind of thing?
Well, the two biggest influences for me at Hull City, and it was a crying shame that they left, was Malcolm Shotton, who was a centre half, vastly experienced, you know, cup winner, very tough, very strong, very mentally strong, you know, fantastic player. And the other one, God rest his soul, is a guy called Dale Roberts, who was not many people, you know, of a certain generation. A younger generation knew of Dale, but Dale was the best youth coach you would ever ask for. Up with some of the best youth managers that you would hear today, in terms of, you know, very, very strict, very hard on you, but knew what buttons to push to progress your career. And it was such a shame that, you know, that the club was going through what it was going through financially, that people like that left. And I think that probably stalled a lot of young careers, if I'm honest with you, because there was Dale Roberts, unbelievable as a youth manager, Malcolm Shotton, unbelievable as a youth manager. But yeah, look, that's just how life goes. That's how football clubs evolve.
Did you have quite a good FA Youth Cup run with that team at one point?
Yeah, look, Dale, under Dale Roberts as a youth manager, we should have been playing the dream team, i.e. the Manchester United, your Giggs, Scholes, Beckham, but these people, we should have played them in an FA Youth Cup semi-final. We was probably 5 minutes away from knocking Sheffield Wednesday out of Boothry Park, which would have then put us in the semi-final to play Man United's kids, if you like. I think Sheffield Wednesday went and scored in the very last few minutes. We picked up injuries between the replay and that game. We lost the semi-final. We lost the quarter-final in the replay at Hillsborough. And then didn't get the chance to go on and play Man United's dream team, if you like, of kids. But the team we played in, I still believe now we probably would have given them, we probably potentially could have beat them quite easily, because we had such a good youth team at that time. And it was probably just because of what Dale had instilled into us, the strength, the mental strength, and developed you as a player. And we had a great team. It was a shame, really. It was a shame, because, you know, we went on and beat Newcastle's dream team kids, if you like, in the League Cup. Your Lee Clarks, your Steve Howie, your Steve Watson. We went and beat them at Boothry Park. So that showed you how good we was as a youth team.
And that obviously gave you a lot of belief as a young player that you can make it at the bigger level.
Yeah, look, I guess everybody, you know, is under no illusion it's easy, but I got a chance. Somebody liked me in terms of the youth managers, they saw the potential, and, you know, with a bit of good attitude, I got my opportunity, and some people never, you know, and they may argue, they might say they were better players. You know, that's just people's opinion. But yeah, look, I was never under any illusions that it's going to be hard work, but I got my opportunity, and that was all down to Dale Roberts and Malcolm Shotton for me. You know, Terry Dolan gave me the chance to play, but it was everything that had gone on prior to Terry Dolan and Jeff Lee coming into the club that I was where I was at that point in time.
So, like, in terms of your debut, Newcastle away, is that the same day Willow made his debut as well?
Yeah. So again, it looks, you know, as a memory, it's probably the one of the, apart from, you know, the kids and everything else, that's probably the biggest memory I've got, you know, as playing against, you know, people like Mark McGee and, you know, Mickey Quinn, you know, who were seasoned professionals, Scottish internationals, Irish internationals, you know, 30,000, you know, screaming Geordies, no fences around the pitch. It was like, you know, walking down a tunnel and, you know, I came out pretty much covered in, you know, spit and everything else that they're spitting at you. And I was like, Jesus, you know, this is like a baptism of fire. But it was, the whole build up to the day was just amazing to play at somewhere like Newcastle. And now when you look where they are now, it's like, you know, it's fond memories, mate.
You know, actually winning the game as well, it must have been massive.
Brilliant to win the game. And I think if I remember rightly, I'm not sure if Ozzie Ardiles was the coach at that point at Newcastle at the time. Probably was. And to win it, and we'd already been relegated by that time. So I guess it was, you know, it was irrelevant, really. We were trying to win to stay up, but that's the chance we got as young kids to play. And then, you know, we had a great day. And that, you know, the trip home kind of introduced me to professional way of life, albeit not so professional, I guess. You know, not like nowadays, but it introduced me to probably the latter stages of being a professional footballer in that day and age, where you could, all I could hear on the bus was bottles of beer rattling around. I'm thinking, you know, is this what's meant to happen? But that's what happened, you know, and they were good times, good memories.
Then I'm reading your next game came against Blackburn, and must have been decent at the time as well, and you managed to win that one. Is it in the League Cup?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, some of the games, I just, they pale into a bit of insignificance. I kind of forget, but probably what I do most, I don't remember a lot of the dates, but I remember the players at the time, you know, your David Speedy's of this world. You know, there was like a Scottish international, you know, played for Liverpool, and it's like chasing them around, you know, on a Saturday afternoon or a Tuesday evening. It was like, this, because they're people who you grew up watching playing, and I'm like, you know, it's, then you're having to play against them. It was like, this is a bit surreal. But again, it made you, the problem what we had, I guess, at that time was, by the time I was probably 21, I'd probably played 100 league games. And I guess nowadays, you wouldn't be playing that many league games as a 18, 19, 20 year old. But because the club was going through the financial problems it was, they had no choice. So you kind of had to learn really early. And you was playing against really seasoned professionals who was, you know, you didn't necessarily always have that older head alongside of you, because the club was in financial struggles, and you was playing with, you know, maybe me and Gary, and you was playing against Les Ferdinand and Gary Thompson at QPR, and you're like just bullying you all afternoon. And that was the challenge that we faced at the time with Hull, because, like you say, you're playing 100 league games by the time you've turned 21, and you're like, it's unheard of, but you just got thrown in, and you wouldn't want it any other way. But yeah, it was tough times.
And then was it 93, 94 where you started playing more regularly? Was that alongside Hobart at centre-back then?
Yeah, look, you kind of started getting a bit older and a bit more wise and a bit more experienced, and you got your opportunity. And there were some really good years for me, 93, 94, 95. And yeah, I started probably getting more regular, but playing, you know, getting, you know, really good performances was I was turning in, and, you know, and I was maturing too early, because I was probably only about 22, 23, but I was probably maturing that then instead of when I was 26, 27, 28, but I was having to mature a lot younger. And yeah, I probably played a lot of my better football then, but under really tough conditions, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm reading, you managed to get a goal at Port Vila where albeit in a defeat, but it must have been a nice moment.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, I was never, even now I used to score a lot when I was younger. I remember Port Vale away, one of the biggest grounds you could play on at the time. It was huge. And I remember scoring, and I think it was probably we got set up, and then Martin Foyle, Port Vale striker, within about 10 minutes went down the other end and scored. You know, so it was like, took the shine off it a little bit because we ended up losing. But, you know, it's like some of the players, you know, we play with, you know, I remember going away with Hull and we played Swindon. Roy Carroll was in goal for us. And it was when Roy was really young. And we used to call him Mr. Tickle because he had really long arms and was like, oh my God, who's this young kid playing in goal today for us? We're going to get absolutely thumped. Because they had your Mark Walters of this world and they had all these senior pros who was like really good and they was flying high. And we had Roy in goal and everyone's going, oh my God, you know, who's this in goal? If it hadn't been for Roy, we'd have lost about 10-0. Because he was absolutely outstanding and hence the reason he went on and did what he did. But there's like little bits that stick out in your mind about, you know, players and, you know, there's just so much, mate. There's so many good memories. And you only really start thinking about them when you start asking and poking questions. Because I kind of, if I have a quiet time, I'll sit and think about stuff. But I don't necessarily, if people want to ask, I'll start, you know, having conversations, but I'm not that type of person to go and tell people this and this. If people want to ask, I'll tell them, but I'm not that way inclined.
Yeah, fair play. Then reading that you got a bit of an injury that kept you out for a few months the next season, is that right?
Look, I picked up a few injuries, you know, along the way. I'd always suffered with a knee. I still suffer with it today. I suffered with a bad knee. I never forget, you know, where it happened. It must have been in a whole schoolboys game on Francis Askew or Sydney Smith, I think it was, and in a tackle, my knee, and probably done more damage than I expected. And this was before I joined Hull and went all through Hull with a bad knee, bad cartilage injuries, and it gradually got worse and just picked up injuries along the way. But I mean, that's not an excuse for anything, but I've always suffered with a sore knee and it was never ever apparent. And no one would ever know that. Funny enough, I saw a specialist last week and saying about, you know, I'm really struggling with it because I had an ACL repair probably 6 years ago and torn cartilage again. And he just said, I can't fix it. He said, you need a new knee. And I'm like, well, not going to have it yet. So, but yeah, I'd struggled with a knee injury for a while and picked up injuries that season. And yeah, just struggled all throughout the year, really.
And, you know, in terms of the management, you know, Dolan and Lee, we've talked to, you know, attacking players like Richard Peacock, who kind of said, you know, it's moved frustrating the style of play for them. But as a centre back, did it kind of suit you, their style of play, or how did it work?
Well, you know, like I said, when I grew up, you know, through the youth teams that I played with, we was encouraged to play football. You know, when Dale Roberts was our youth manager, he played in the Ipswich teams of Alan Brazil and Arnold Muren and Kevin Beattie and all these top players who played football. You know, so we were encouraged to play football and we trained to play football. And it kind of, that's not how we got encouraged to play. We got encouraged to keep that ball as far away from our goal as you could get it because they didn't want us to concede, you know, which a development of us, you know, it didn't look great and it wasn't pleasing to the fans, but, and I understand that, but, you know, we were encouraged to play balls behind other teams and ultimately that ball was as far away from our goal as they could get it. You know, it's not how we grew up playing, but that's kind of what we was told to do. And if you didn't do that, you knew about it, as you probably would recommend. You gather that with the likes of Jeff Lee.
Yeah, I mean, you hear a few stories about Jeff Lee. I think Sam Sharman said he was known as the fire starter at some points or something.
Yeah, look, Jeff's a good guy. You know, he's a good guy. Get him out of football. Jeff's a good guy, but geez, honestly, he just had his way of his methods. And as a 18, 19, 20 year old, did you want to question their methods? Probably not, because you weren't in a position to. I don't think those methods, what we got encouraged to do, helped a lot of young players. And there was a hell of a lot of good players, young youth players at Hull, and never got that chance because they just got killed by it. It was really tough going, and a lot of that was the club was in a financial difficult time. So I understand. I was a lucky one. I got the opportunities to play, but there's a lot of kids didn't get the opportunity, and it probably a lot of the good stuff they didn't have the opportunity to bring it out of them, and it got knocked out of them a little bit, if I'm honest with you.
And in terms of like contracts, like Hobbo was saying, when he felt he had a raw deal, he went to talk about it with Terry Dolan and got a bit of a dressing down for suggesting he should get more money. Did you have any experiences like that?
Yeah, look, I had a great season in 1995-96, and there was interest from other clubs. I know at the time Swindon was sending scouts regular to watch, and there was interest coming, and I went on a month-to-month contract, and I was having a great season. I remember it got to December, and I'd had a fallout with Jeff. You know, he was telling to do something bizarre, and I was like, well, I don't agree, that's not right, blah blah blah. This was at half time, and I think I came off, he took me off, and then on the Monday I said, right, I'm going to go in and speak with Terry, and I said, look, I think I'm doing really well, I think I should really be getting another $20 another £50 or whatever it may be. And he was like, no, you're not having it. And I said, well, you know, I think I deserve that. I've done well since I was a kid here, and I've been very loyal to the club. And, you know, I'm not asking for a lot, but I think I deserve a bit of loyalty coming back from the club after everything I've, you know, helped with and done. And they weren't prepared to give me, you know, an extra few pounds. And I took the choice, I'm going. Rightly or wrongly, I took that choice and left. And probably that's, you know, within probably 3 or 4 months, they'd gone, Jeff and Terry. So if I'd have probably stuck it out, it probably might have worked out different. But out of principle at the time, I thought it was, I wasn't happy with how they was conducting certain things, and we had a fallout during a game, and I put my cards on the table to Terry and said, look, you know, is there anything there financially for me? And he said, look, we are struggling. And I took the choice, that's it, I'm going. So I left.
Yeah, fair play.
And it wouldn't, you know, it was probably one of the hardest things I will ever do, because it's my hometown club. You know, I've got not many memories, loved playing for my hometown club, and to have to leave was really, really difficult. But it makes me a better person, made me a stronger person, made me a mentally stronger person. It makes me a better person in business now, that, you know, how I deal with my staff now, it makes me a better person for that. So it's all been character building, but it was difficult leaving at the time. And probably it's the biggest regret, I guess, is leaving when I did, because they left within 3 or 4 months of that happening.
Just skipping back a bit then to 95, 96, where you start playing regularly again after your injuries. Tough season on and off the pitch, but were you just glad to be back playing again?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's all you want to do is play, you know, and, you know, it's what you know, you work and you train for all week long, and, you know, it's all you want to do. And, you know, that's all I wanted to do. And, you know, to be back playing with, you know, with all the fans there, and, you know, for as little fans that there were at them times, you could hear everything, and you could hear the encouragement, you could hear, you know, the disgruntlement, but it doesn't stop you just wanting to play. You just wanted to play, and that's what you grew up wanting to do.
And who were you playing alongside at that point? Obviously, we're not mentioned Bob Duess much, but I don't know if you were playing alongside him at that
Yeah,
point or someone else.
I played with Rob, and I think Rob got a really bad injury. Again, certain things stick out in your memory. I never forget, it was away at Bournemouth, Matt Holland. It was Christmas, I think it must have been 22nd of December, something like that. And it's when Rob broke his leg. Matt Holland snapped him in a tackle, and I was playing alongside Rob at the time, and looking at his leg, it was like a banana. It was horrific. So yeah, we played with many different people: Russ Wilcox, Rob Duez. There was a lot of young kids who came in and played as well alongside. But it was just it was hard. It was hard going at the time because, like you say, I go back about the club being in financial difficulty. I was then having to be the senior player at 22, 23 year old, which is it's unheard of. It doesn't happen like that now, and that was difficult. It was difficult, and all I wanted to do was learn off, the senior pros, and starting from when I was 16, 17, I was playing alongside Richard Jobson and Malcolm Shotton in the reserves, and that was a great, grounding for football. And if it would have kept going that way, it'd have been great. But you quickly had to learn that you was becoming a senior player at the age of 21, 22. So that was difficult back then. But you just wanted to play, and you had many different partners who you played with, Gary and Rob, and maybe Neil Mann would have played there, or it was Simon. Can't remember what his name is, but there was that many, mate. There was never really any settled back four that you could just, keep playing, keep playing, keep playing. There was always chopping and changing because people was young, and you couldn't get a settled team.
And when the likes of Dino and Lintner Brown are getting sold, are you kind of used to it at that point that your best players are going to go kind of thing?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's inevitable. Wherever you play, the best players are always going to go, and especially at Hull. I mean, Dean would always have gone anyway because, he was head and shoulders above people. So he was always going to go. But obviously they sold him because they needed the money. But then they started selling others around just because they needed the money, I think. I don't think they sold them because, there was the next best thing. It was that I think the club needed finances, so they had to move people on.
And just in terms of like camaraderie in the team, like talked about that famous photo where you're all in fancy dress and everything. Did you have some good nights out at the time?
Yeah, look, mate, there's been heaps of great memories, from Christmas parties to going away in hotels and, before games and stuff you shouldn't talk about, and I won't say too much, but there was all heaps of stuff going on, mate, which doesn't happen today. And but the camaraderie between us was great. Everyone would be taking the piss out of each other, and your shoes had been nailed to the wall, or your socks had been cut up, or my car had been pinched, or there was heaps of stuff. Everything that you hear what footballers do nowadays, it's no different whether you're playing at Tottenham or at Hull these years. That just happened everywhere. I was listening to Talksport the other day, and someone was asking Ali McCoist about, what was Gazza like, and brand new car. He bought a brand new car. He put a fish in the boot so he couldn't, and the
Yeah.
smell. So all that type of stuff, mate, went on. Believe you me, that happened at our level and their level. And I walked through Hull City Centre, come back, and my car would be covered in soap suds, or it wouldn't be there, or it happened. It went on and it happened. So it's, yeah, we got some great memories to talk about, and got in some scrapes, mate. I won't lie to you, got in some scrapes with being on nights out, being local boy, and you think you're a superstar, and you go out and you have a bit of fun, and then the club get to know about it, and you get into trouble, and you're getting fined, and you know, I actually probably ended up owing Hull money more than them owing me wages at one point. You know, but you're young and you're learning at the end of the day. You know, so you know, I don't look back at and regret some of the things that we did like that, because that was just growing up. You know, no, everybody would have been the same at that age, playing for your hometown club, playing football. You know, everybody would have been the same. So I don't regret some of the problems I caused the club, and not bad problems, but everything gets back to the club. And, you know, ultimately it costs me in my pocket. Probably still should be paying them back now, I think.
You know, we've talked to players like Adam Lowthorpe and Hubber about the protests at that time, and they kind of said they felt the fans looked after them, even if you were scrapping with them at times. Yeah, well, how did you feel at the time?
I agree. You know, we was all in that same boat. Me, Gary, Adam, Neil Mann, all in the same boat. You know, and I totally understand the club's frustrations, and they would take it out on the players, and rightly so. I don't think it was necessarily personal to players, but you know, at the end of the day, they're working hard all week. They're paying the money. They're coming in. And sometimes they'd see a pile of shit on a Saturday afternoon, you know, which ain't great. And I totally get their frustrations. And for whatever, whether they took it out on us and they called me this or whatever, I don't hold any grudges to any of them, because it was tough times, mate. It was a tough time being a Hull fan. Absolutely, it was a tough time being a Hull fan back then. And you know, some would get behind you, and some would give you a hard time, and you just had to get on with it.
You know, I always like to ask players who played in that Bradford game just how surreal it was being on the pitch when all that was going on.
Crazy, mate. I mean, you asked me about what, you know, what was one of the games that sticks in your memory? That, I mean, it was, if I remember rightly, that Bradford City had the Hull end, and it was just like invasions, and it was like, what the hell is going on? You know, and there weren't barriers at the time. And it was people just, you just running, you know, there's obviously fights happening, and he was just trying to get off the pitch as quick as you could. It was just stuff, it just stuck out in your memory. It was like, you know, it was not nowhere near like some of the disasters that have happened in football, but you can, you know, it's a scary place to be when you've got people full of alcohol charging on a pitch at you, you know, not necessarily wanting to get to me, but wanting to get to fans, you know, because you've got the Hull end at one side coming one way, and you're kind of stuck in the middle. There's only one way you're going to go, and that is to the side, and off you go. So, yeah, look, things like that was just like, geez, what's happening? It was crazy.
And then, you know, you've mentioned the circumstances in which you left the club. Did you ever come back to Boothby Park as an opposition player?
No, I never. I never actually. Okay. I never came back after that. It was, I think the only time I maybe would have come back was probably towards the end of me playing. Maybe when I would have maybe played at Ferriby, we maybe would have been a final there or something like that. But I never went back. I never went back to play there. And yeah, look, and again, it was no big issue for me going back. I'd had a good time there. I played there, and you know, great pitch. You know, surroundings was what it was at the time. You know, there was nothing really to compare it to in terms of, you know, these fantastic stadiums that are around now. I think Scunthorpe's had built a brand new purpose one. It was like, oh, that's good, but actually, when you look at it now, it's not that great. You know, so it was. It was, I didn't never regret going back. It was never a big thing for me to go back. I mean, once it's done, it's done. I move on pretty quickly with stuff. I don't sit and dwell on things. And, you know, I had a great time, did everything what I wanted to do in terms of becoming a footballer, played for my hometown club. I don't sit here today and go, I wish I'd have done that. I've moved on. I've got a great life. You know, I own two businesses over here, and you know, I've got a great life. So I don't look back and, you know, I wish I could have just done that. I wish I'd have done that. Yeah, I regret probably not signing when I look in hindsight what happened. But I don't regret anything I did when I played for Hull.
The few clubs you went to afterwards, you only played a handful of games for. Was that down to injury or what happened?
Yeah, look, I left Hull and went to Swindon and did a couple of weeks trial there, and Steve McMahon was the manager at the time there, and played a few reserve games, and it looked like it was going to happen. And my problem was I was travelling backwards and forward to Wiltshire, which was a big trip, and it didn't work out. And then played a few games at Oxford and played a few games at Ferriby. And then I remember Ferriby, we got to the semi-final of the, it would have been whatever cup Ferriby were playing. It's I think it was a
Vase or something.
Yeah. A Vase cup. And then Chesterfield rang me up and said, "We want you to come and play for us." And I was like, "All right, but I've got a chance of playing at Wembley here." So you can either have a full-time job again or you can play part-time at Ferriby. And Ferriby are on the brink of going to Wembley. Again, every boy's dream was to play at Wembley. And I was like, "Oh, so what am I going to do?" Anyway, I took the chance, went to Chesterfield. Subsequently, the chance to play at Wembley happened again because they got to the semi-final of the FA Cup.
So, oh, wow, you were there then.
I was there then. So being in and around Chesterfield at that time was like, oh, my God, what's all this? I was getting measured up for my Wembley suit at one point because we was literally on the verge of going to Wembley, and the euphoria and all the press and all the trappings and the clothing and the tracks. It was like something you'd never seen before. I was like, never have experienced anything like that. But we should have. When you look back, we should have been playing Chelsea at Wembley. As daft as it may sound, like, we should have played Chelsea at Wembley. We got robbed on the day against them because it was unbelievable. But we was getting measured up for suits and everything. It was like, this is great, you know. But it didn't work out. And then I stayed to the end of the season and, you know, didn't sign any more deals with them. But you know, again, great memories, great players. I mean, playing alongside Sean Dyche, Burnley manager now. You know, I've got videos when you probably want to see it. There's a video on YouTube. You remember they think it's all over?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a video where Chesterfield was the guest, the sportsman. So we walk on with the FA Cup and I'm sat on the front row and, you know, and Lineker's feeling whatever hair I've got left and Rory McGrath, I think it was. So they was on there touching us, feeling us, and that's what the euphoria was because we'd done so well in this FA Cup. And then it didn't work out, replay lost, and then it kind of all went back to normal again. So so I had some really good rides and experiences, mate. Unbelievable. And then, you know, went and played overseas in Singapore, which was again, mate, brilliant, absolutely brilliant time.
I saw Sean Dyche's penalty from against Middlesbrough recently. It's like the most emphatic penalty I've ever seen, I think.
Yeah. And he is exactly what you see him on the TV. You know, you either love him or hate him because he is exactly that type of person. But yeah, he went on and did well for himself. And yeah, look, there's heaps and heaps and heaps of memories. I'm not into writing books. Nobody want to read my book, you know, but people want to ask me. I could sit and talk for hours about some of the stuff we've done and did, and you know, so.
And yeah, you mentioned Singapore. Like, how did that come about and what was that like for a couple of years?
So Bob Davidson, who played for Hull at the time, you know, he's ex-Leeds United, he was playing for Hull. He became an agent. And said, do you want to, I said, oh, look, I'm getting fed up. I want to go and do something different. I want to go and play somewhere different. And he actually said, do you want to go and play in Australia where I live now? And I was like, well, I've never really heard of it. You know, the place where he was asking me to go to. And I was like, oh, probably not that keen. And he said, oh, look, there's an opportunity to go and play in Singapore. And there was a few English boys out there. At the time, and I thought, yeah, why not? So I went over there to Singapore, and again, you know, packed a suitcase, went over, you know, traveled business class. They took me over, picked me up in a nowhere to lie, picked me up in the airport, You know, it was like royalties got off the plane, and I'm like, hang on a minute, I ain't that good. But they come pick you up, you know, they've got all the fanfare going on, they put you up in this fantastic accommodation, 3-bedroom apartment, swimming pool, you know, in the heart of Singapore. I'm like getting really well paid. I'm like, how did this happen? And I'm like, and then playing, it was like brilliant. Like I'd train at 6 o'clock in the morning and I'd train at 8 o'clock in the evening because that was the cool air times. And you know, we'd get sponsored. The team was sponsored by Nike. I'd be walking around Nike factories. I'd be picking a watch. I'd be wanting them trainers. I'll have that tracksuit. My friends would come over and see me. And at the time when I was there, I think Brazil, Holland, and Italy were all sponsored by Nike. My pals would come over and I'd say, right, come on, we'd jump in the car. We'd go to the Nike factory. And the boys would be picking, I'll have 3 away Italian shirts and I'll have 3 home Brazilian shirts. And they're going, yeah. We'd walk out with great big bag fulls of watches and tracksuits and running shoes. And it was like, my pals would come over and be like, this is great. You know, it was a different world, mate. Honestly, it was a different world living over there. And we were successful. We did really, really well. The problem what had killed us is we had to kick off at 5 o'clock. It used to kick off at 8 o'clock. We kicked off at 5 o'clock because of the World Cup, because they was trying to get the games and watch the games. So we kicked off at 5 o'clock. The heat killed us. The heat was absolutely horrific. So, you know, like the manager back then, what I had, I'll never forget him. He was an English fella. But I'm talking like 20 years ago. This guy, when they're talking about heart monitors and recording your data and your stats, 20 years ago, the manager I was playing for was doing that. Not with chips and devices and heart monitors. He was doing it on steps and, you know, he was monitoring the amount of steps he was doing by certain runs that he could get data out of you. And he would be saying, if you're not running X amount of yards, that's why we're getting beat. And at the time you go, why is that relevant? You know, because I hadn't ran 10,000 metres today. Why have we got beat? But you look 20 years later, everything is about stats now. And if you're not putting enough effort in as an individual, you're going to come up short. So, you know, I've got great memories of a guy doing stuff that is really, really apparent now, years and years ago, in a really antiquated method, you know, which was chalk and cheese to people like Jeff Lee. You know, if you couldn't kick somebody's head off, then you didn't want to know you. You know, so it's, different people along the way, mate, was really different. Just that whole stage was really difficult.
And then, you know, you come back to England, play a lot of games for Gainsborough. Then eventually, you go back to Ferriby, play a lot of games, and then you got the chance to be manager. What was that like?
Yeah, it was great. I loved it at Ferriby because I was a player with them all, and I kind of, you know, then it was pretty easy to become a coach because I knew what their strengths and weaknesses were. The challenge was, because I was still playing a little bit at the time, was to separate myself because people then needed to be managed and needed to be told, and you had to draw that line, which was difficult to begin with. But then as the team developed and progressed, it was great. I mean, we had a fantastic team. And John Anderson, you know, another close pal of mine, worked with me. We had a great team at Ferriby. And that was, again, under such financial restraints, mate, we had a great team. And again, I took the chance to leave because I had an opportunity to go live in Australia with work. And not long after that, all the money got ploughed into Ferriby. Timing hadn't been great, mate, with me, let me tell you. But we had a great team at Ferriby. The pitch was fantastic. We passed the ball like for fun. And that's how I wanted them to play, with no fear. You know, I wanted them to be brave, not about tackling people, being about brave, you know, wanting to be on the ball, wanting to play football, wanting to showcase how good they can be in the right areas of the pitch. And it paid off. But we probably came up short because we didn't have the finances, as what some teams did. But then the money came into Ferriby and that took them on. But I think Ferriby then was again a different team in a different style of play. We just had it working really well for how the players we had, for the finance we had. We was great. It was a great team. Yeah, I loved it. It was great. We had some good times. We had just as good a times as I did at Hull, albeit, you know, some of the players probably weren't as well known at the time, but we had great times. I would speak to the chairman, Les, and I'd say, Les, come on, just give me 100 quid. That's all I want. And I'd take the boys out and we'd get on the beers and I'd take them for a curry after training. And, you know, we'd find somewhere where we could just sit there and have a few beers and drinks and have a laugh. And it was just like the good old days, being back in Hull, you know, with the boys, you're slipping out and Les didn't know too much what was going on. And he thought the 100, you know, pound was just a bit of team bonding, but we'd be straight in the Duke of Cumberland and we'd be, you know, having 6 or 7 pints. And it was just all about team spirit and bonding, mate. And it worked. And we had there were some great players. There were some really good young players there. And again, didn't get the opportunity at Hull, but there was, you know, you look back now and some of them players were good enough. If they'd been coached properly, they was good enough. But it's the same with a lot of people in Hull and around the country. Just that opportunity, just didn't get the opportunity. I was fortunate I had it and I got it, but there was a lot who didn't. But there's a lot of really good players, mate. A lot of really good players.
Was Gary Bradshaw there at that point?
Yeah, Bradders was there. Bradders was brilliant. You know, he was
scored a lot of goals for you.
He scored heaps of goals. Great player, shit attitude at times. But that was Gary. You know, if you could manage his attitude, he was a great player. But again, you know, he didn't really get... He was at Hull at the wrong time. He was at Hull at the wrong time. It was never going to work for Gary at Hull because he was not what they was wanting him to be. But great player, unbelievable, you know, goal scorer. Like Dean to a degree, you know, could get the ball into him, could hold it up really well, you know, could roll his players. Not very big, but, you know, he was nasty. He could put his foot in. But yeah, he just didn't get that nurturing that a manager needed to give players like that. And he would have been successful. I'm sure he would. You don't score the amount of goals at whatever level. He was a good goal scorer, mate. And goal scorers, whoever you're playing against, he knew where the back of the net was.
And just in terms of coaching, like, is it something you've carried on in Australia or not really?
Look, I did my badges. I got to a UEFA B badge. So my next badge would have been my A licence. Now, if I wanted to pursue a career in football, I would have gone for my A licence. But it was the intention for me was I'd come to Australia for work purposes. I wasn't pursuing a career in football or soccer, as they call it here. I wasn't pursuing a career in football. So it didn't appeal to me to go and get my badges, i.e. my full license. But I coached, you know, the kids, my girls. But yeah, that's as far as, and that's, I was comfortable with that. I didn't want to go full time with it. You know, there's a lot of people who want that full time thing, and I loved what I did at Ferriby. Absolutely loved what I did, and probably could have done all right out of it. You needed a break. You needed the chance to go on and coach somewhere. I mean, ultimately, you're going to get the sack at some point. I mean, that's, you know, there's nothing sure in soccer, in football. Like, you're going to get the sack as a manager at some point.
Yeah,
I had a career outside of football by then. And that's why I've never longed for football. I've never longed to have it back. I'm too busy, mate, with what I do at this moment in time. I've got too much happening. And that's why, you know, I probably left football at an age where, you know, I had to pursue something different. And now I don't long to play football. I don't long to coach football. I'm just a supporter. People say, you're going to come and play. And I'm like, not interested. I'm happy just to play golf. that's how
sounds
I
pretty
am.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, cheers for your time, mate. Like, just finished with a few social media questions.
Yeah, that's all good.
And then one from me, like, is there a toughest opponent that stands out that you played for in a City shirt? Played against in a City shirt, sorry.
Look, there's been a few. And like when I've gone back to being quite young and playing against some very experienced players, there's been a lot along the way. Like you say, you know, David Speedy, you know, Mark McGee, Mickey Quinn. But probably the one that stands out most was Les Ferdinand. When he was at QPR, he played up front with Gary Thompson. I think me and Gary Hobson actually marked him. Mate, you know, he was the strongest person with the hardest head you have ever played against. Strong and quick, and yeah, he was tough. But there was a lot, mate. There was a lot. But you know, for any notoriety, probably Les Ferdinand was the best.
And then on Twitter, someone called Heben Metro ASC. Says, name your best boot boy.
My best boot boy, Steve Mulligan, because, and I'll tell you why, not because my boots was clean, because his mum used to make him the best packed lunch, the best sandwiches, which I used to take off him. That's why he was my best boot boy.
Yes. And then Gary Hobson says, who was the worst player you played with at City?
Oh, mate, there's a few, but, you know, I've got to be careful what I say because that might come back and bite me. But there's been many. I don't know whether I should say, look, yeah. who was the worst? Probably Chris Lee, I reckon, just because of his dad. He's a good guy. He's a good guy, mate. Look, there's been some shocking players. I was never the best footballer in the world, but you know what? It is what it is, you know. You'll never catch that
tiger. Thanks for listening to this episode of This Was Boothry Park. As always, just like to give a quick shout out to those who made the research easy, including OnCloud7, TigerTube Player, Tiger Bass, and Rich Gardens the Decade.